the smell of ionized air and grinding dust is the first thing that hits you when you step into the shop. It's a scent that stays in your clothes and under your fingernails, a permanent reminder of the work. Before the first arc ever flashes, the ritual begins. You pull on the heavy leather jacket, feeling the weight of the cowhide settle over your shoulders. It's stiff, smelling of smoke and old sweat, but it's the only thing standing between your skin and a spray of molten metal that's north of 3,000 degrees. You tug on the gauntlets, making sure there's no gap at the wrist, then drop the hood. The world turns a murky shade of green through the lens, silencing the visual noise of the shop, until the only thing that matters is the narrow seam of steel clamped to the table. There is a specific kind of silence that comes right before the strike. You're holding your breath, steadying your hand, feeling the slight vibration of the machine humming in the background. You ground the work, ensuring the circuit is complete. Without that solid connection, the arc will wander, stuttering and popping like a wet firework, leaving behind a mess of brittle bird poop welds that wouldn't hold a screen door shut, let alone a chassis. You check your surroundings. No puddles of coolant, no frayed cords, no canisters of flammable gas nearby. In this environment, complacency is the fastest way to end up in the emergency room. The first move is always the butt joint. It looks simple. Two flat plates laid edge to edge, but it's the ultimate test of heat control. You strike the arc, and suddenly the darkness of the hood is shattered by a light brighter than the sun. You find the puddle immediately. It's a tiny swirling pool of liquid sun. You have to move at a rhythmic, glacial pace. Too fast, and you leave a shallow, weak stringer. Too slow, and you'll blow a hole right through the center of the workpiece. You watch the edges of the plates melt and fuse, the filler rod dipping in and out like a needle stitching fabric. You aren't just melting metal. You're re-engineering the molecular structure of the two pieces until they become one. When the bead is finished, you lift the hood and the shop light feels dull by comparison. The weld glows a dull cherry red before fading into a stack of overlapping scales, often called a stack of dimes. You take the chipping hammer and knock away the slag, the gray crust shattering to reveal the bright silver ripples underneath. It's a clean butt weld, deep penetration visible on the backside. But the work doesn't stop there. Next comes the lap joint, where one piece of steel overlays another. This is where you learn to manage gravity. The heat wants to rise, and the puddle wants to sag. You angle the torch, favoring the bottom plate, watching the molten metal bridge the gap. It's a different technique, a steady C motion, or a tight weave, ensuring that the throat of the weld is thick enough to handle distress. You can feel the heat radiating through your gloves now, a steady throb that lets you know the metal is truly saturated. Finally, you set up the T-joint. This is the backbone of most fabrication, the point where two planes meet at 90 degrees. It requires a steady hand and an eye for the fillet. You tuck the electrode deep into the corner, initiating the arc and watching the puddle tie into both walls simultaneously. It's a delicate balance. If you lean too far to one side, the other remains untouched, creating a cold lap that will snap under the slightest pressure. You find the rhythm, the crackle of the arc sounding like frying bacon, the universal sign of a perfect weld. As the last bead cools, you set the torch aside and strip off the leathers. Your hands are a bit shaky from the concentration, and the sweat is cooling on your forehead. You look down at the bench, at the joined steel. It isn't just a pile of scrap anymore. It's the foundation of something structural. Something built to last, held together by the precise application of heat, light, and the discipline of the shop.